You're listening to Stephen Maggi, host of one of America's top interview programs, The Stephen Maggi Show.
Hi, thanks for joining me today. I'm Stephen Maggi. Later in the program, you will meet the very funny Lauren Weedman, who has written a book that takes a very close look at the ups and downs of her own life. But up first, with the election coming up, we take a look at some of the people that have lived in the White House, including Hillary Clinton, who was there as First Lady back in the 1990s. You know, you hear things about what goes on in the background of politicians' lives and so forth, on the grocery stands and so forth, and of course, we dismiss all that. But we have a guest on who really knows the people that really live with these folks and see them at their best and at their worst. That's the Secret Service. And Ronald Kessler, when he writes a book, it's got some meaning. They're not just threats thrown out based on word of mouth, that kind of thing. This comes right from the Secret Service. He's got an incredible book out now. He's written books on this topic before, but now this is the first family detail. Secret Service agents reveal the hidden lives of the presidents. And Ronald, great to have you on again. How is it you get these Secret Service guys to trust you so much that they're willing to say all this?
Usually I waterboard them. That works pretty well. But I think, you know, it's really hard to tell. I think they feel that I tell an honest story, that I already have a lot of sources. I'm sincerely interested in how they do their work. One person said, you listen to people, other people don't listen. So I think it's a combination of some of those things.
Yeah, and I think it's really incredible because all your books, they're not particularly cited one way or another. I mean, you look into the pros and cons of both Republicans and Democrats. Is really, you're not trying to make a point. You're just really trying to tell the story, aren't you?
Exactly. But there is a point, and that is that we need to pay attention to character when we elect presidents, because when you see what some of these people are really like as opposed to the image that they try to convey, it's pretty shocking. And if you don't pay attention to character and track record, we're going to be disappointed. Look at what happened with Richard Nixon with his Checkers ethics episode, and sure enough, we got Watergate. These are things that we look at in our daily lives when we choose a friend, when we choose a new employee, but somehow when it comes to the president, people just look at how well they smile on TV and what they promise. And we're going to be disappointed over and over again if we keep doing that.
I couldn't agree more, and we see it time after time. And you mentioned President Nixon. Let's start with him. The Secret Service said there, and this one shocked me, that some of his friends brought in a nude stripper. I mean, that's the last guy I would have thought to throw with that. I mean, you know, between Kennedy, Clinton, all these people. And yet, tell us what happened then.
Yeah, that was exactly the point. He was such a straight-laced individual that it was just ironic that his two close friends, Bebe Rebozo and Bob Aplanop, would bring him this nude stripper as a present. They were out at 2 a.m. drinking, and they drove back to the Key Biscayne, Florida compound where Nixon was. And inside the trunk of Bebe's car was this very shapely nude stripper holding a champagne bottle. And they went up to the guard gate, and the agent said, "What's that?" He heard a noise in the trunk. They opened the trunk. There was the nude stripper. And Bebe said, "She's a present for President Nixon." Agent said, "No, she's not. She doesn't have ID. She can't come in." So that was the end of that. But they brought her back to Bebe's house. So who knows what happened after that.
Did you hear much about President Kennedy with the Secret Service? That I always heard about, you know, people bringing in guests, so to speak, for the pool and that kind of thing. Did they talk much about that, or did you get into that?
Yeah. I have various episodes with JFK and his various women friends. For example, there were Fiddle and Faddle, two young assistants, and they would swim in the White House pool with JFK, who was nude, and Fiddle and Faddle would wear just a white T-shirt, nipple showing, nothing else on. One day, Jackie left the White House, then decided to come back, and her Secret Service detail radioed his detail, warning them that she was coming back. JFK jumped out of the pool, gave his Bloody Mary to a Secret Service agent, and said, "Try it, it's quite good." So he was very nonchalant about the whole matter.
Yeah, it just, that whole story with the pool is really amazing. And Could somebody still do that now, do you think? I mean, can that stuff still go on? I mean, cause you, one thing that shocked me about your book is you see things happening all the way from that point to today. I mean, yeah. So there's still that ability.
Well, back then, you know, the press would not write about these kinds of activities, including with President Johnson, who was even more outrageous. He would have sex with five of his six secretaries. One time, Lady Bird caught him having sex with one of the secretaries in the Oval Office, and Johnson blew up at the Secret Service and said they should have warned him and insisted that they install a buzzer system. But today, you know, they can still do it, but not in such an outrageous fashion. I mean, for example, when presidents go to out-of-town events, they stay in hotels. They can certainly have, you know, meet with a young lady in a hotel room, or I guess in the residence, you know, if the first lady is away. So it's still possible. We certainly saw that with Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky in the Oval Office.
You know, guys like Kennedy and Clinton, did the Secret Service enjoy dealing with them? Because they seem, at least on the surface, to be much happier guys to be around and so forth. Because I know your book talks about, and we'll talk about this in just a second, talks about some of the people they don't want to cover because of, you know, the people are so difficult to work for. So, I mean, my question is, were they really enjoyable? I mean, was that fun, or does it? You notice kind of no change in what the Secret Service guys said?
Well, it depends on the individual. JFK really did treat his agents very well. He would keep track of their families and ask about their wives if they were sick, and treated them in a very respectful manner. Bill Clinton, when he was in the White House, could be difficult. He was always late. Agents would refer to Clinton's standard time as 1 to 2 hours late. But more recently, he's become much more laid back and friendly with agents. But that doesn't compare with the way Reagan was or the Bushes. They all treated their agents in a really exemplary fashion. They would always schedule Christmas so that agents could be with their families. And the agents really, really liked those individuals.
Well, you know, you would just think on the surface that anybody should love these guys. These are guys that are willing to jump in front of you to take a bullet. I mean, it would surprise me. And that gets to our point about places they don't want to be. And one would be in Hillary Clinton's command, because apparently that's like the worst assignment you can get.
Yeah. Being assigned to Hillary's detail is considered a form of punishment, because she's so nasty to agents, just makes their lives miserable day and night. And that is a clue to character. That's something that we should pay attention to. Someone like that who actually enjoys making other people's lives miserable is someone who has a really unstable personality and could blossom into all kinds of problems in the White House, including targeting enemies through the IRS and other agencies. Hillary Clinton pretends to be this compassionate woman who cares about the little people and she's going to help the middle class, but the reality behind the scenes is that she holds those same people in contempt. And we're almost fools for believing these images that they try to project. So that is why it's so important to learn about the character of candidates and presidents.
Yeah, and it really is a shame, Ron. That's why I think the book is important. I think we don't do enough about that. We buy this, and you're right. These are all manufactured by publicity experts and so forth. And really, most people, particularly at this level, running for the White House, there should be enough information on these folks where we should know their character well before we ever decide to pull a lever for them.
And look at the way Bill and Hillary walk around holding hands all the time. It's a total charade. Even the most happily married couples don't hold hands all day long. And, of course, behind the scenes, I reveal in this book the first family detail that Bill is still philandering, and that he has a mistress, a busty blonde, who was codenamed unofficially Energizer by agents because the first letter of the code names for each family are the same. And in the case of the Clintons, Hillary is Evergreen, Bill is Eagle, and so the agents called the mistress Energizer. And Energizer shows up as soon as Hillary leaves, usually from the Chappaqua home. Agents are instructed not to ask for her name, not to sign her in, not to ask for her ID, even though even Clinton's relatives have to show their ID when they go to see Bill. Unlike Hillary, she is very nice to agents. She'll bring them cookies, and one hot day she was wearing a low-cut tank top. She came in her vehicle and offered the cookies through the window to the agent at the gate, and he noticed that she has enhanced breasts. So we have every little detail in this book, the first family detail.
And I think one of the things I wanted to talk with you about, too, is I saw there was an incident. This was also, well, this is now with President Obama, actually, the actor Bradley Cooper. And I mean, so they have to deal with folks like that and kind of bend the rules for people that they normally don't have to make these adjustments for. Talk about what Bradley Cooper did with President Obama.
This is an example of Secret Service management's practice of cutting corners and laxness. When Bradley Cooper went to the White House Correspondents' Dinner where Obama spoke, a high-ranking Secret Service official in New York ordered agents at the Washington Hilton to just let Bradley Cooper and his SUV into the secure area in front of the hotel where only Secret Service vehicles were allowed, and even they had to be screened for explosives because anybody could introduce explosives into a vehicle or under a vehicle. And yet the order was just let him in, don't screen him, don't bother him, let him in. Well, someone could have taken out the president if they had put explosives in this vehicle. And you can imagine the dismay of the agents at the Hilton who are being told, just forget about the most basic security rules. And that is a message that goes throughout the Secret Service. Who cares about the rules? And that, I think that's one reason that the agents in Colombia hired prostitutes, a story that I broke. Not that that conduct is common, it's not. But these agents felt, hey, management flouts the rules, cuts corners. Why shouldn't we do whatever we want to do?
When we return, more with Ronald Kessler, author of The First Family Detail, Secret Service Agents Reveal the Hidden Lives of the Presidents. You are listening to America's Great Conversations on The Stephen Manchie Show.
Provocative guests, real interviews, surprising answers. This is The Stephen Manchie Show.
I'm here with my good friend Logan Reed, who can change your life. That's right, she's a life coach. And I think you're going to like what she has to say. Logan, tell people what a life coach is.
So what I do is I partner with people to get clear on what their dreams are, what they really want in their life. And then what we do is we create the plan and the actions that actually have them create it and make it happen.
Yeah, and it's a lot of fun. I can tell you, I work with Logan myself, and it's just a wonderful experience. I think you got to try it. Logan, how can people get a hold of you to learn more?
They can give me a call at 360-529-1848, or they could write me at logan@loganreedcoaching.com.
And finally, your website?
My website is www.loganreedcoaching.com.
You are listening to Ronald Kessler, who presents more important stories about our nation's leaders, Republicans and Democrats, and the agency sworn to protect them. I was shocked reading your book that the whole attempt with President Ronald Reagan's life was partly because of Secret Service letting some unscreened spectators get close to him.
Yeah, this is an example of how nonpartisan the book is because it exposes Reagan's White House staff for overruling the Secret Service to allow unscreened spectators within 15 feet of Reagan as he came out of the Washington Hilton, and that's why John Hinckley was able to shoot him. And this was, you know, just as a, you know, a whim to have a nice PR opportunity, and yet it almost resulted in the death of a president. And then the Secret Service covered this up, and it's coming out for the first time in this book, The First Family Detail.
It should outrage the public that these type of things, for political purposes, could put, you know, could have had got him assassinated. Could have been a mass tragedy. And I'm seeing it even today. And I want to talk with you about some of the things that are going on right now. Even in the campaign we just finished, the Republican candidate Mitt Romney apparently regularly left himself open to assassination. What was going on there? They didn't screen the crowds right, or what happened?
This is because the Secret Service would not provide enough magnetometers at his campaign events. The management has this attitude of, we make do with less, we're the great Secret Service, we don't need to worry about every little detail. So Romney would find that when an event was about to start, there were many spectators still outside who had not been screened. So he would give a talk to the people who had been screened inside, but then he would go outside and talk to the people who had not been screened. Well, of course, any one of them could have been a terrorist, could have taken him out. And it's just incredible that the Secret Service would, quibble about the number of magnetometers. There was a constant point of friction between Romney's campaign aides and the Secret Service, and absolutely could have resulted in an assassination.
Yeah, frightening. And even the Secret Service director, Mark Sullivan, he apparently diverted agents from protecting President Obama and ordered them instead to protect his assistant at her home. What's that about?
It just gets more and more unbelievable. Mark Sullivan, who was director for 7 years, ordered agents to, instead of protecting Obama and Michelle at the White House, including when they lift off from Marine One in the helicopter, they're supposed to be there to look for snipers, to instead protect his assistant in Southern Maryland. She had been harassed by a neighbor. She called the police, as she should have. The Secret Service has absolutely no legal authority to protect its own employees. On top of that, the agents retrieved confidential law enforcement records and arrest records on this neighbor, which is a violation of criminal law, because you cannot do that if you don't have a valid law enforcement reason. And this went on literally for months, with these agents being assigned to watch the assistant. Simply mind-boggling.
It really is. And speaking of mind-boggling, you know, the late-night comedians have some fun with Vice President Joe Biden. But after reading your book, I can see why. I mean, there was just some bizarre things. For example, and this is a minor thing, but apparently he swims naked in his residence in Washington and doesn't particularly care. It offends some of the female Secret Service agents.
Sure. You know, the female agents signed up to take a bullet for the president, but not to see Joe Biden nude. And for that matter, I wouldn't want to see him nude either. This goes on both at his vice president's residence in Washington and at his home in Wilmington. There are pools in both locations. In addition to that, Biden goes back and forth to Wilmington often several times a week, sometimes even twice in one day, at our expense. He goes on Air Force Two. The cost since he took office has been $1 million. Mm-hmm. And these are strictly personal trips. It's one thing to go back home for, you know, a few times a year, but he uses this as his personal taxi. He has a vice president's home in Washington that we pay for. He has a job in Washington. He has no business using Air Force Two for a daily commute. And the most shocking thing of all, I think, is that when he does go back, he insists that his agents keep his military aid with a nuclear football, which would launch a retaliatory nuclear strike, at least a mile behind in the motorcade. He wants to have, again, this image of regular Joe. He wants to, you know, make people think that he's a man of the people, even though he's spending $1 million on these trips. And the result is that if Obama were taken out or could not perform his duties, we would be defenseless against a nuclear strike, because there would not be time for the football to catch up with Biden to launch a counterstrike.
When we return, we will continue our conversation with Ronald Kessler, author of this book that explores the Secret Service and their look at presidential families. It's called The First Family Detail, Secret Service Agents Reveal the Hidden Lives of the Presidents. This is The Stephen Manchi Show.
Thought-provoking questions and fascinating conversations. This is The Stephen Manchi Show.
Waste management has earth-friendly plans that fit the biggest corporations and recycling programs to help smaller companies get started. We're there for you every night and on the job with you every day. When you put waste management to work, you get an environmental partner and big ideas for every size business. From everyday collection to environmental protection, think green. Think waste management. To learn more, visit WM.com.
You are listening to Ronald Kessler, author of The First Family Detail, Secret Service Agents Reveal the Hidden Lives of the Presidents. Ronald and I were just discussing the pretentiousness of Vice President Joe Biden. It's funny because he always tries to portray that image of like a guy, your regular guy, taking the train, going back and forth, right? In reality, he's racking up over $1 million for this unnecessary, transportation back and forth. But more importantly, this is just frightening. That must drive the Secret Service crazy because they have to realize this, and it just they can think the worst because they're trained to do that. It's got to just drive them crazy, and there's really no place for them to go with it until the book came out.
That's right, and it puts them at risk as well, the agents, because there are not enough agents there near him to protect him. You could have five terrorists come after him, and they wouldn't, they would outnumber the agents. It's totally colossal lack of judgment, colossal recklessness, puts us all at risk.
Do you think, Ron, if he decides to run for president and he gets into primary battles with Mrs. Clinton and so forth, that some of this stuff is going to really come out, or is the press destined to try to hide this?
Well, so far the press has hidden this. First of all, nobody in the press asked under the Freedom of Information Act for the records from the Air Force on these trips, which I did. And secondly, since the book came out, it's number four in the New York Times bestseller list, but none of the mainstream outlets had picked up any of these revelations. It's been all over the TV and radio shows. It's been all over the internet, but somehow the major publications have not touched it.
Well, I think that's why this book is really important, because I think you've proven through your past books, too, that where you're getting this information and how we researched it out, this is not, some guesses or I overheard somebody say, that kind of thing. I mean, this is people that are right there. And I mean, one of the things that I think a lot of us think about, but we don't know, and it was confirmed for me, is the importance of First Lady Michelle Obama in the current administration. Some of the Secret Service agents apparently have heard her make suggestions to her husband and so forth, telling him to be more aggressive in attacking Republicans and siding with blacks and any kind of racial controversies and so forth.
Sure. Well, the agents say that both Michelle and Barack Obama do treat them well with respect and consideration, but the agents are dismayed to overhear these conversations where she urges him to be more aggressive in attacking Republicans and to side with blacks in racial controversies. And we've seen that over and over again, where Obama wades into a controversy on the side of the black individual, knowing none of the facts. He did that recently this week on the Missouri shooting. He did that with the Cambridge, Harvard professor who was black and got in trouble with the police. If a white president did that in reverse, there would be hell to pay, you can be sure. But somehow Barack Obama thinks it's just fine to take sides based on skin color.
Well, as you talk to these Secret Service guys, I'm getting the idea that you say that they're basically they like working with the Obamas. They're respectful to them and so forth. With the favorites, you think the favorites might be the Bushes, or what do you think in terms of the last several presidents?
Definitely the Bushes, as well as Ronald Reagan. There was one anecdote about George H.W. Bush when he was vice president. He was at the vice president's residence where the Navy stewards would make cookies every night, and the agents would come out in the middle of the night and eat some of the cookies. Well, one agent was out at 3 a.m. looking for the cookies, and he heard this voice behind him. It was the vice president. Where are the cookies? And so they both went looking for the cookies. They found them. They ate them together with milk. And just an endearing story. With Ronald Reagan, whenever he would go into Air Force One, he would always go in the cockpit and greet the pilots and keep track of their kids' names, whereas Jimmy Carter did that only once in his whole four-year term. Jimmy Carter was another one who was a phony, claimed to be a jolly peanut farmer, man of the people, populist. The reality was he would tell his agents not to say hello to him in the morning on the way to the Oval Office. Apparently, it was just too much bother to say hello back to another human being. Mm-hmm. He would also pretend to carry his own luggage in front of the cameras, but it was actually empty, or he would give it to aides to carry. He would come into the Oval Office sometimes at 5 a.m. and tell the press office to tell the press that he was in there working hard for the American people, but then he would fall asleep on the sofa. So, you know, it's one charade after another, and, the press falls for it. We, the people, tend to often say, well, so what if they treat people like that? So what if these are the private moments? We just want to hear what their policies are. But then somehow, once they get in the White House, they lack leadership, they lack integrity, they lack credibility because they have such poor character.
Yeah, and isn't it fair to say that if you're willing to treat somebody that's going to jump in front of a bullet for you, you know, like dirt or just like, common, they're not doing anything for you, what are they going to think about us? It's got to make you wonder how
exactly
they make decisions, you know?
Yeah. Hillary Clinton cares about little people, she claims, but really she has disdain for them. So what kind of policies is she going to have?
Yeah, unbelievable. One last question. Mitt Romney, we mentioned about him and so forth. How did the Secret Service get along with him? I mean, because that would have been the other way to go. How would that have turned out?
They liked Romney. In fact, when he lost, one of the agents on the detail actually broke out in tears as Romney was about to give his speech admitting defeat. They liked Ann Romney as well. She would make pancakes for them. They had a very good relationship.
This book is full of stories that you can't put it down. It's The First Family Detail, Secret Service Agents Reveal the Hidden Lives of the Presidents. Ron, I know it's been a big hit so far. We can get it everywhere, I assume?
Everywhere, every bookseller, every online outlet. And my website is ronaldkessler.com, which has links to those outlets.
Right, and you've got some other great books there as well.
I do, on the FBI, on the CIA, and even Palm Beach.
We've just taken an inside look at some of our leaders. Now let's explore the life of one of our favorite comedians. You probably know who Lauren Weidman is. She's a former Daily Show correspondent and now the acclaimed star of HBO's Looking. And she's got a book out called Miss Fortune. What's interesting is she looks like she's got everything going for her, right? Well, this book, which is, again, Miss Fortune, Fresh Perspectives on Having It All from Someone Who Is Not Okay, really talks about that. You know, and Lauren, sometimes things aren't what they're what they look like, right? I mean, you've had kind of a great life, but also a difficult one.
I think this is part of the promotions for the book, too, where it's always like she had it all. And every time people say that, I'm like, no, I didn't. Did I? I didn't notice.
Well, I mean, you got success in Hollywood.
I guess you're on TV, it seems.
Yeah, right. I mean, you're on TV, so everybody thinks, wow, she's got it great. You know, I mean, what a deal. Everybody wants to be on there. But, I mean, you've had your difficulties. I was reading, I mean, the book is real funny, but it's also a little sad. I mean, you know, who wants to be, you're a Hollywood actress, but your husband has an affair with a babysitter. That really happened.
Right. I know. Is it such a, like, it's so, I live a good story, okay? So I'm there's a part of me that just loves that. I love telling it just because I like to, you know, it's such an exciting story to tell people. I'm like, guess what happened? You know, and everyone, you know, suddenly everyone just drops their bagel and they want to listen. But this is, all my friends eat bagels. I just want to clarify that that's everybody I know eats
a
bagel.
Me too.
But I am good. Okay, then we're like friends. But I, yes, it's true. This horrible, dumb cliche is now my life story. And I don't know why it's here so much that it happens in Los Angeles. Maybe because a lot of the babysitters are actresses, and actresses are prostitutes. No, no, they're so pretty, and there's a lot of people who, you know, a lot of men out here who had these expectations of what their careers were supposed to be, and they want to feel special, and, you know, and they're not. And I mean, I don't know. It's some kind of formula for great tabloid, you know, headlines, but not necessarily for wonderful, stable marriages.
Yeah. Well, the part of the problem is, I mean, half the porn out there is babysitter porn, right? I mean, it's this goofy fantasy that we've all put on ourselves.
She's like, I think I've been talking to a lot of NPR shows, and it doesn't really come up so much. You're like, babysitter porn, am I right? No, you're right. They do sort of fetishize that in a way. I mean, I guess that they do. Well, and they, oh boy, I mean, they are. I mean, our babysitter was gorgeous. In fact, some of the moms in preschool were always like, just shocked that I had hired her. They were like, why would you bring that hooker in your family? Like, don't bring chocolate when you're on a diet into the, you know, in the house. Don't bring candy in front of a baby. Like, don't hire those people. And I'm like, what does it matter? It doesn't matter if she's beautiful. I mean, she's a kid. I mean, she was. She's like 18.
When we return, you'll hear more from Lauren Weedman, author of Misfortune, Fresh Perspectives on Having It All from Someone Who Is Not Okay. You're listening to The Stephen Manchie Show.
What would you do if you weren't afraid? What would you do if you knew that you couldn't fail? My name is Logan Reed, and I'm a PCC credentialed life coach, working with people every day who want to know the answers to these questions for themselves and then make it happen. I work with people who are ready to take charge of their life, to leave their unsatisfying job and launch a new career, have the romantic relationship of their dreams, prepare for retirement, experience more joy. I partner with clients to support them in getting clear on what they truly want in life, creating the plan to get there, and taking the action to make it all come to life. If you would like to explore how working together can make your dream life a reality, I invite you to give me a call at 360-529-1848 or write me at logan@loganreedcoaching.com. Want to learn more about who I am and what coaching is? Check out my website at www.loganreedcoaching.com. I look forward to meeting you.
You are listening to Lauren Weedman, who turns a piercingly observant, darkly funny lens on the way her life is actually not okay in her book, Misfortune. Lauren was just talking about her husband's affair with a family babysitter. Well, isn't it funny, though? They blame you for it. Why isn't it the husband's fault? I mean, why are you the diet? It doesn't make sense.
I know, exactly. That's what I did. No, well, at the time, I had the same reaction, where I was like, well, it shouldn't matter. I should be able to, you know. But then I also knew that there's a part of me that was uncomfortable with how the girl would dress. But I was always ashamed of myself for thinking that. Like, I'd be like, oh, she's asking for it. Like, you know, I fancy myself as a bit of a feminist, and I'm like, what an awful thing to be thinking. Like, that's just the girl is, yes, she's overly sexualized or whatever, but that's her culture, and it's so awful, and oh, girls these days, blah, blah, blah. You know, I never, you know, ever, ever would think to be like, next time you come over here, like, you'd be in overalls and a ski cap, you know, like.
Right.
But she could make that sexy, too. That girl was powerful.
Well, you know.
She probably looked hot in that.
And that isn't the only thing you talk about that's in the book, like, that which I think is funny. I mean, I loved your thing about threesomes. Again, you know, glamorized and all that stuff. Everybody thinks it's like it is in these X-rated films and stuff. Right. Not quite that great in real life, though, was it?
No, I mean, maybe it'd be better now because I'd maybe be, you know, I'm good at bossing people around now, so maybe I could really, you know, enjoy it. But at the time, I was in my 20s, and I didn't plan on it.
I wasn't walking around going like, I'm looking for people to help me fulfill my fantasy. No, I was dating this guy, and I liked him, and then he brought his friend with him, and you don't want to be rude. That's not a very good beginning of me explaining it. It's just that I hadn't planned on it, and at the time it was like 22 years old, I think, and I was in Amsterdam, and I remember thinking when they brought it up, like the two of them were like, hey, they're like, we could make you very happy, or we could go home right now. And I was like, let me try to happy or go home. I thought my mom will never find out. That was my first thought. I'm like, I'll just do this. It's what an experience. And I'm always thinking of things as stories. Like, I was like, wait till I tell everybody.
Yeah.
Is that awful? Like, I would really live thinking like, oh, the next day, my God, I'll have something to talk about. I guess I could be a serial killer as well and be like, I'll tell everyone. Well, they're more private.
Okay. Well, I mean, it is kind of funny. And, you know, when you're that age, too, it's one of those things where it's like, well, I should do it, right? Because it's really cool, and everybody says it's cool, you know? And,
Right. It'll make me. And it really was afterwards when I told people, audience is everything. Because I told my English friend, Rachel, I told her, and she started crying. She was like, why did you let them do that to you? Why? Like, Lauren, this was up here happening that whole time. Because we lived in the same building. And I was like, well, I didn't get attacked or something. Like, I knew what was going on, kind of. And then I tell another girl who's this American dancer chick, and she was just like, okay, next time that happens, you call me, because I'm coming over. Like, she was, like, high-fiving me, and I was like, oh, yeah, I do that. I'm just crazy. Like, I'm just so sexually free. When the truth was, I was so not, but I was trying to be. Just, like, trying on different identities, I guess, and seeing what worked. That one didn't work.
Well, that's what's funny about the book, because you bring up a good point. All the stuff that seems so glamorous or interesting or fun or from the outside isn't always the way. For example, you talked about meeting your birth mother for the first time. And I think it's funny because you mentioned that it was nothing like the Oprah stuff. And I know exactly. Everybody thinks, oh, my God, you're going to have one of these incredible things. And sometimes life just doesn't imitate the art, does it?
No, most times it's never what you – not for me at least – because it's always so much more complicated. Or I'm, I guess, a bit more neurotic and about things. That when I met my birth mother, it's just such a surreal thing because I didn't have an expectation of who she was going to be. Like, I guess there was a little part of me thought that I'd get off the plane and there would just be me, but just with like, you know, frizzier hair or something, or like me, but with different shoes on. Like I never imagined what she would look like. I never pictured her, because I couldn't. And then to see just this, the woman, I mean, I'm like, she has brown hair, but it makes no sense. My hair is blonde. Like, it just was all, I mean, I couldn't process it, really. It was sort of overwhelming. And I went completely numb, actually. I was, but it's been great knowing her. I mean, I met her when I was 19, and it's been just as complicated as every other, you know, family relationship.
Yeah, again,
I'm so lucky, actually, in there.
You're not working off a script. Now, how was it becoming a mother then? Tell us about that.
Becoming a mother? I'm a mother? That seems like a very ill-thought-out thing. I am becoming a mother was great. I actually, it was one of those things where I didn't admit it to myself for a long time. Yeah, for somebody, I'm always like, I write about myself, my experiences, and I'm so, like, out of touch in some ways, too, with what my experiences are. But I did really want to be part of a family, and I never really had been. I felt like I was like a visitor. Like, I was a good visitor, but I didn't really have, like, I never felt truly a part of one family, I guess.
Yeah.
And then when I had my son, suddenly I was like, okay, like, I've never felt more okay, actually. And it classied me up. It classed me up in the sense of, you know, I'm like, well, Leo's mother wouldn't do such things. Like, suddenly I had a little more self-respect and wouldn't tolerate certain things I would have tolerated before. And I was pretty happy, actually. And then he needed a babysitter. And then that shifted. But now things are good. You know, things are great now because it's wonderful to come home, because every time I come home, my ex-husband still isn't here.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. It's so exciting. It's a gift that keeps on giving. And Leo's great. My son is great.
And your book is great, too. I got to say, people are going to really enjoy it. It's very funny. And yet, at the same time, you know, I mean, all the PR stuff says, you know, it's all so tragic. I didn't find it tragic. Yeah. I just found it like, you know, don't over expect what, you know, kind of just live your life. Do you kind of feel that way sometimes? Like, I just got to go on, whatever comes, you know, bring it on.
Yeah, for sure. No, I know there's like some people like write one book about this awful thing that happened, like the experience of whatever, of when they, whatever, the traumas. It's like one big trauma and that kind of just stops the parade. Well, I just, they just keep coming. And I expect they will keep coming. So to me, it's just life. I mean, it's just not one, you know what I mean? It doesn't define everything. This one, I don't know, one bad day or one, you know, rough event. That's just the nature of being alive, at least for me. So, and thank goodness it's such good material.
Yeah, if you can make it funny, exactly. Well, the book is Misfortune, Fresh Perspectives on Having It All from Someone Who Is Not Okay. A great book. And Lauren, if we want to follow you online somewhere, where do we go?
You go to Babysitters. I'm just kidding. Can you imagine? Like, I have a website called Knock Knock Daddy. It's a babysitter porn site. It's laurenweedman.com. I have a website, and I'm on, you know, all that. I'm on Twitter, Lauren Weedman, and whatever. I don't even know how to say it. I'm so old, 47, gross. and on Instagram, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we'll find you.
Out there.
We'll put you in Google. You're all over there. Lauren, thanks so much for being with us. Great luck with the book.
Oh, thank you so much. It was nice chatting with you. Thank you.
Well, that's it for today's show. Remember to check out our website, StephenMaggiShow.com. We're only a few weeks away, and then the show becomes Vegas Never Sleeps, and we're going to cover everything Las Vegas. I think you're going to enjoy it. This is The Stephen Maggi Show.
Visit us at Stephen with a V, MaggiShow.com. This is The Stephen Maggi Show.